Good evening and greetings in Jesus' name this evening. I've been blessed to be here, enjoyed the sharing that you brethren have done with us, and appreciate the hospitality of the home church here as well. Lord bless you for embarking on this venture for our benefit. Preserving the family unit. I would like to, just by way of introduction, draw our attention to 2 Timothy chapter 2. Verses 20 and 21. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 20. But in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and of silver, but also of wood and of earth, and some to honor and some to dishonor. If a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified and meet for the master's use, and prepared unto every good work. Now in a house there are vessels, some to honor and some to dishonor. As we sat around the table and talked about what vessels might be appropriate for illustration tonight, there were two that came to the surface. The vessel to dishonor was this. Now, it's not wood, it's not earthen. But boys sitting with your dads, what's under the kitchen cupboard in a pail like this sometimes? What's this for? Slop. That's right, a slop bucket. The vessel to dishonor. Now, the vessel that won the place of honor in our discussion for our house was this. Girls, with your mothers, what is this? What's usually in this? Flowers. Flowers. And at our house, this crystal vase has been around for, I'm not quite sure, maybe it didn't quite start when we got married, either the second or third year, I'm not sure. But that vase has held roses on my wife's and my anniversary date, and it's always held the number of roses that we've had anniversaries. Now, I'm not sure how long it's going to be able to continue that. I'll let you guess how many roses might have to stuff in that. A vessel to dishonor. If I pass this around, as clean as they made it, they washed it and they washed it and they wiped it out, and it still stinks. I could have brought it full, but I decided to save you the pain of that. And instead, we just did a little photography. So here is our vessel to dishonor, boys. You've had the joy of emptying this stuff. You can just probably smell it if you can see it there. You can almost smell it. A vessel to dishonor. The things that are in the vessel of dishonor are things that make us wrinkle up our nose. The things that make us turn our head away as we throw it out. They're things that make our stomach churn if we get too close. They take our appetite away in the vessel of dishonor. The things that we usually place in this kind of vessel are things of beauty and pleasure. They bring smiles. They bring happy feelings. They bring sunshine. They bring a positive outlook. They bring good smells. My wife likes the smell of flowers better than I do. There are some flowers I enjoy and other flowers I don't enjoy as much. But anything is better than this. All flowers are better than this. But in a great house, there are vessels to honor and to dishonor. And I'd like us fathers and mothers to just make the application tonight as we consider preserving the family unit. We can be a vessel to honor. We can be a vessel to dishonor. And the vessels to dishonor, as they are represented in husbands and fathers and in wives and mothers or in young people and children, the things that are of that nature curl up our nose. They turn us away in distaste and disgust. And probably every one of us know of family situations where things that mom or dad has done or said, or that a young person has done or said, would make you just make your innards curl when you think about family life. How can one exist with that? Vessels to dishonor, vessels to honor, the blessing of complementing, the blessing of balance, the blessing of working together, of enjoying each other, of challenging each other, of linking arm in arm, as it were, emotionally and mentally, and sometimes physically, to accomplish projects and to live life. Vessels to honor, vessels to dishonor. Which are you in relation to this subject? Preserving the family unit finally boils down to every one of us. It doesn't boil down to your preacher. It doesn't boil down to what books have been written on the subject. It doesn't boil down to how you've been educated. It boils down to how you are applying the principles of God's truth in your life, in your home. And so as fathers and mothers, it boils down also to how we are conveying those principles to our children so that they go away equipped to build homes that will stand the test of the pressures of society, the world in which we live. And so this thing of preserving the family unit is not really as easy as ABC 1, 2, 3. It's living life, day in and day out, in ways that please God and bless others. I don't know what you expect tonight. I put a bit of my outline, kind of the bones of my outline, on the board here, just so you could maybe follow along a bit as I skim through some of this on the surface, more than plowing deep, I'm sure, because of the different components that we'd like to at least just touch on. Maybe it'll help bring you along. But we would like to cover preserving position, preserving purpose, preserving principle in relation to our preservation of the family unit. Let's think a bit about this thing of position. And so most of us have come to the end of school. We've had a school picnic, and probably at every one of our school picnics, we played a ball game. Maybe two games of ball, or maybe three, or maybe 10 innings. And so you have first baseman, and you have third baseman, you have second baseman. In between first and second and third, you have shortstop. And then you have the outfield, and then you have the pitcher in the center. You know the positions, the pieces of the puzzle, the game. And we also know what happens when shortstop would really kind of like to be first baseman. Or maybe first baseman would really enjoy being shortstop. Whatever the case, the other being in the other's position finds themselves out of their position to try to cover the position of desire and miss what's going on in their own little sphere, location. Position is important. When you're playing ball, position is important. And when you've been assigned to the far left field, then you should be in the far left field, not wandering around in center field somewhere. when you've been assigned to first base, then you stay on first base because that ball's going to be fired at you any moment. You don't want to find yourself 20 steps away right up alongside shortstop. We can see God's design all around us. And when God designs, he designs for purpose. It isn't casual. It isn't happenstance. It isn't for the fun of it. But it is for a purpose. And so God designed within the family. He designed roles. He designed position, if you will. He designed roles for us to fill. And within those roles, there are responsibilities. And when we fill those responsibilities, there's a beautiful clockwork that happens within the plan of the home and in the marriage. And I think we all understand that the more beautiful and the more wondrous God's design, the more subtle and destructive our enemy's counterfeits are of the same. We'll talk a bit about that along the way as well. Does your role matter? Father, does your role matter to you? Sister, does your role matter? Do we understand our roles? Are we filling our roles? What does that have to do with preserving the family unit? And I say it has all to do with it, and it means the success or the failure of it, depending on our understanding and application in our roles. Think for a moment about a father's role. And so you go to maybe right away in your mind, Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 5. And in Ephesians chapter 5, we have the picture of Christ being the head of the church and the parallel how that the husband is the head of the wife. And you go to 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 3, and you read how that the head of every man is the Lord and the head of every woman is the man. And so God uses this word. In our Bible, we have the word head in our English language, the leader. And so what does your head do for you? Your head does a lot of things for you. Your head keeps you out of trouble. Your head guides your body at points of danger. Your head coordinates your body functions. Your head brings purpose and design and structure to the body. And you take a chicken's head off and you understand what it's like to be without a head, right? There is no design, there's no purpose, there's no structure, there's no accomplishment. There's all kinds of activity and all kinds of flurry, but there's nothing there that is structurally important to a chicken's life. It's gone. There's nothing left there. And so the husband, the father, is the head of the wife, takes responsibility, fills his role, foresight to see ahead to the dangers around the corner, taking initiative, leading out. And fathers, husbands, when we fail to do that, we put our wives in a very difficult position. We make it very difficult for them to fulfill their role. Even as Christ is head of the church, let me draw our attention to this thought in 1 Corinthians 11 yet as well. The head of every man is Christ, and the head of every woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. Successful leadership springs from being successfully led. And I think we can understand that, brethren. Successful leadership understands from being successfully led. Another way to say it is, we don't lead successfully until we learn to follow. And as Christ is the head of every man, must happen before man is prepared to be head of woman. And when Christ is no longer head of man, we see it all about us that man is inadequately equipped to be head of woman. Fathers, we must fill our role. taking initiative in leadership, taking initiative in love. Now, as Christ loved the church, so ought every man to love his own wife, even as his own, what? Body. Even as you take care of yourself, even as you look out for your own welfare, even as you understand the feelings you have within yourself, so ought a man to love his own wife, taking the initiative in love. The idea we get from Ephesians 5, very strongly the idea is that of sacrifice. As Christ gave himself, so ought men to give. This love gives. Love without sacrifice really is not love at all. And it's not very natural for us men. We enjoy our wife bringing us the cup of, for you maybe it's coffee, tea, donut, cookies, snack at break, whatever it may be. We enjoy being pampered a bit. Are there any one of you who are married here who don't enjoy being pampered? It's not a very manly thing, is it? But we enjoy the kindnesses of our wives, and it's not really very natural to our selfish hearts to sacrifice. That takes effort. It takes decision. It takes work. It takes commitment. It takes purpose of heart. Love that enables the submission of a godly woman. Colossians 3 words this interestingly. Verse 18, it says, "Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands." We'll talk about that in a moment. "As it is fit in the Lord." As it is fit in the Lord. Husbands, I think we understand that we don't take the place of God for our wives. We don't take the place of the Lord in their experience. "And as it is fit in the Lord, they submit themselves to us." I would like to suggest to us tonight that "as it is fit in the Lord" also implies that on our end of the spectrum, the responsibilities that we have, love enables us to make requirements that are fit. As it is fit in the Lord. And so, as fathers and as husbands, we require things that are fit because we submit to the leadership of Jesus Christ. Taking the initiative in discipline. "Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." Taking the initiative in discipline. Now, I know personalities vary, and I don't know that we want to necessarily try to get into sorting all of that out. But I would like to say this, that brethren, it is crucial for us to take the brunt of that. It's crucial for us to make the decisions in relation to discipline for our children. It's crucial that our children understand that father makes those decisions and guides the home. Not that mom doesn't take care of things when dad's gone. Not at all. And also that mom has dad's support when dad comes back home. But the child knows that mom is doing dad's wishes. Mom is fulfilling dad's wishes. Mom is only doing what dad would do if dad were here. Taking initiative and discipline. Our wives tend to be a bit more sensitive than we are as men. Maybe sometimes a bit more observant and perceptive as well. Maybe it's just perceptive in other areas. But their input in our lives in relation to this thing of discipline is important. It may be natural, sisters, for you to say, "But do you think you were too hard on him?" And it may be natural for us to say, quietly in our minds, "Yeah, I expect you to think I was a bit too hard on him." And sometimes that perhaps is the case. And other times perhaps we need to listen up and understand what they're feeling and what they're seeing in relation to the child that they are at home with for perhaps triple the time during the day that you are as a father. But laziness on our part brings confusion and it brings discouragement to the home. Laziness, fathers, on our part. Part of preserving the family unit is order in roles. And so for us to fulfill our role, mother's role, finding joy in submission. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 3, if you will. Let's just read a few verses here. This pertains to father and mother, but focusing in particular on mother's role here. 1 Peter 3, verse 1, "Likewise, you wives, be subject to your own husbands, that if any obey not in word, they also may without the word be won by the conviction, by the conversation of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation, coupled with fear, whose adorning let it not be the outward adorning of the plaiting of hair and of the wearing of gold and the putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For this manner, after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also who trusted God adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered." We'll stop there. Finding joy in submission. Beautiful passage here, portraying a heart condition, a heart attitude that produces godly submission. I would like to suggest tonight that when submission is viewed as adornment, it becomes intentional and effective in the marriage relationship. When submission is viewed as adornment. There's some adornment that's wrong, that draws attention to ourselves. There's adornment in the true meaning of the word that all of us did before we came here, no doubt, at least this morning. And some of it happened throughout the day for some of you sisters, probably. I'm not sure how much happened for you men throughout the day. But we put different emphasis on the different sides of the house in relation to this thing of adornment. We care about how we look and how we present ourselves. Sisters, I just challenge you this evening with this thought. View submission as an adornment, as something that makes you as an individual beautiful, that makes you miraculous, that makes you lovely and complete and fulfilled. The family unit will not be preserved without this. Notice the connection in verse 5, the adornment, the submission, and the item of trust. Old time, the holy women also who trusted God adorned themselves, being in subjection to their own husbands. And I would clearly understand as a man, as a husband, as a father who has failed, as a husband who has failed, who has mistakes, who has humanity, I would clearly understand that there are times when it takes a firm trust in God for my wife to trust me, to submit. Don't let go of that concept. Understand that there will be times when it will make you reach out to God to trust your husband and to follow along in submission. But it's a very beautiful thing. A helpmeet. And so we won't turn to Genesis chapter 2, verses 10 and verse 20, I believe it is. But those, or verse 18 maybe, verse 20, those two verses, God says two different times in speaking of Adam that he needed a helpmeet. He was without a helpmeet. God was going to give him a helpmeet, a help that was meet. And the thought of those words is an opposite or a counterpart. And so while you have the beauty of bringing balance and missing components to the husband-wife relationship, you also have the challenge of seeing another side, of having a different perspective, of seeing through a lady's eyes, seeing through a feminine perspective, and all the while trying to submit and mesh your perspective with your husband's. This highly valued gift of meekness enables the helpmeet. And you think about God, you think about what he owns, and the psalmist said he owns a cattle on 1,000 hills, and you think about the streets of gold in heaven, and you think about what value is to God. How can anything on earth be of value to God? He has so much, he's so great, and yet he says, this thing of meekness in his eyes and in his perspective is of great price. Great price. There are few things that it names in the Bible that are of great price in God's perspective. Very few. Meekness. Finding fulfillment in family life. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 14 gives us just a little bit of a window into a biblical perspective in the context of women valuing their homes. And this is in the context of widows. But there's a principle here that applies across the board, I believe. Chapter 5, verse 14. I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide their house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. And so the focus here that Paul lays out for the young lady is for her to focus on the needs in her home, to focus on building a godly home, to being a godly mother to her children, giving none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. None occasion. A woman who fails to find fulfillment in her home, but would rather find it here and there and everywhere or anywhere, will not be a preserver of the family unit. She will not be there to preserve that unit. Some ladies are interested in the details of everyone else's problems. They have time to give thought and attention to everyone else's issues. Their own set of issues maybe not looking as big or maybe not looking as interesting. I'm not sure. But notice this. And this is in the context of some of that talk if we were to read the previous verses of gossip and so on. But notice this. Give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. And so, sisters, I just challenge you with that. A settledness, a happiness, a contentment with your family, with your home, with your responsibilities, with your environment, with your house, with your level of income, with your set of problems, with your husband's set of problems, to find contentment and satisfaction, beauty in investing your life where God has put you, preserving the role, finding joy. Youth, just a couple of things. We don't have much time here, and you're going to soon be spoken to, but I'd like to just bring this into context of this environment of preserving the role. There are things for you to do to preserve your family unit, and the sooner you find yourself able to appreciate authority, the sooner you will bless your family unit. Authority is one of those things, whether it's authority in the home or authority outside the home that you relate to, on the job or wherever, in the church. Honoring your father and mother, a accepting their position of responsibility, letting your authority speak into your lives and invest in your lives and bless your lives. The sooner you can embrace that, the sooner you will be blessed, and the fuller you will be blessed with being part of your family unit. Contributing to your family's life. Own your family. Buy up the opportunities to bless your family members. Adjust your schedule to your families. Be there for the family activities, for family worship. Show up. Adjust your schedule. So we have so many things going that can take us here and take us there and maybe hardly see each other, depending on the stage and age of the family. And I understand it gets there. And so how do you navigate the path to independence successfully? Jesus said that there is a point, there is a place where a young man, a young lady should leave father and mother and cleave to each other in marriage. The growth toward independence is right. It's natural. Understand that independence doesn't need to be a rejection of what dad and mom have given you, of what they've taught, of what they've brought. Independence is not a rejection of that. Soon enough, in your independence, in your growth in independence, you will reach back with longing for what you are leaving. Trust me, you'll very likely find it that way. It doesn't have to be plagued with resistance and rebellion. Maybe fathers and mothers, we sometimes bring this on by the expectation. We just understand that teenagers are going to resist, that teenagers are going to rebel, that they're going to have a little period of time in their lives. It's good for us to understand the struggle. We must understand the struggle. We've had it in our own hearts, perhaps. But do we excuse it? Do we contemplate it? Do we allow it in our minds, in reality, to our own past? Do we have to have the expectation of that for our young people in order to accommodate what I did in my youth? I hope not. I hope not. Independence and appreciation can grow together. The blessing of having teenagers in the home, many of you can attest to that. And I would like to reaffirm and reattest to that reality tonight. The blessing of having children grow up in your home. Every stage is a wonder. Every stage is a joyful. It's a blessed experience. Every stage. Don't let the world's mentality of dreading the terrible twos or dreading the terrible teens seep into our perception of how this needs to be. Fathers and mothers build relationships when they're this big so that they will embrace you in relationship when they're this big. Build relationships. God's ways prosper the family unit. We must go on to preserving purpose. If you have no motivating purpose for your home, don't expect smooth sailing, and don't expect to get anywhere. Motivating purpose for the family unit, what is it? Well, God said, he brought Adam and Eve together, and he said, multiply. He brought Noah and his family out of the ark, and he said, go out and multiply. And so propagation of the human race is certainly a natural result of this family unit and must remain a natural result of the family unit. And so we have the questions. Was this child meant to be? I ask us, are we truly pro-life? Is it wrong, you may ask, to not want children? Go to Psalm 127. We won't turn to the Genesis passage. We referred to that. In Psalm 127, we have the picture here of the family. I'll just read verse 3. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. Children are an heritage of the Lord. And the fruit of the womb is his reward. Do we even understand, fathers and mothers, how we bless the heart of God with children? It is his reward. In today's world, children are often not wanted. People are amazed when you come to the counter, you walk through the airport, you have 4, 6, 8, 10 children behind you. The longer the line, the greater the amazement. How do you put up with, how do you do it? What in the world? And the expressions go on. We laugh, we smile. And our young people get married. Let's continue desiring children. Children must be a part. If the family unit is to be maintained, the desire for children must be maintained. Young couple. Yes, that initial time of being just you, there are blessings there in that. And it's meant to be. It's meant to be. But understand that the baby that comes along and that upsets your schedule and changes your lives and takes control of the house makes God smile. And it does you too, most of the time. Desire children. Are we really pro-life in our perspectives of birth control, contraceptives? Folks, don't be ignorant of what you're doing. Don't be ignorant. It doesn't make it right. Understand. And make choices according to God's plan and God's purposes. Often God's timing doesn't often match our planning. Let him have his way and rejoice in it. Let's not allow selfishness to cause us to lose sight of this part of God's design in relation to the family unit. What about protecting the child's environment? Again, I come back to, lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, the fruit of the womb is his reward. And verse 5, happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with enemies at the gate. I should read verse 4 too. As arrows are in the hand of the mighty man, so are children of the youth. And you see the plan. You see a father guiding his arrows. You see the arrows secure in the father's hand. And you see them happy around the table. We could go on and read in Psalm 128. Children like olive plants around the table. Security and belonging is a crucial part of the home unit being maintained. Security and belonging must be part of what our children feel from us. Children who have never found security, never have succeeded, never felt like they belonged, or never felt like they could attain, go on to develop homes of their own, often that are just a magnified complication, an exaggerated complication of the complication in their own life, in their own home. Young people, children, we want you to excel us. We want you to go beyond us. We want you to go farther than we've been able to go as dad and mom. We have our humanity. We have our faults. We have our failures. We want you to go beyond those things. Affirm your children. allow them to fail and allow them to exceed. Express confidence in their ability. Create an environment that makes them secure. Preserving the family unit. Coping with influences. How do we cope with the influences that are around us? I was going to go to Deuteronomy chapter 6. It's been read for us already this morning. Verses 7 through 9. When you're in the way, when you're at home, when you're abroad, when you're in bed, when you're at work, put it on your hands, put it on your forehead, put it on the doorpost of your house, post it all over. The Lord, He is God. Convey the principles of life. Teach. Influence. In our world today, there is so much of this thing of you must let your child make their decision. Become who their inner being really is. Let them, and that thing just keeps pounding at our door and attempting to affect our perception and our perspective in relation to this thing of discipline and how we handle our children. Fathers and mothers, we are to teach them. We are to indoctrinate them. We are to prepare them for life, and we're to prepare them for godly life. Yes, they will choose between sin and righteousness, between the world and the church, between Satan and Jesus Christ. But we must prepare them for the choice for Jesus Christ. Let's teach that. Teach our children to stand. Coping with influences. I was going to say a little about electronics. Brother Steve has fed us well in relation to that. I'll just say this, that social media is preventing close-up, real-life relationships. And I'll say it one more time. Social media is preventing real-life, close-up relationships. How is it affecting your home? Let's talk a little about passing on the faith, appreciating truth from the past. Someone has said, if you don't know where you're from, then you don't know who you are, and you don't know where you're going. Appreciating truth from the past. 2 Timothy 1 and 3, Paul reminded Timothy of his mother Eunice and grandmother Lois, women who were influential in directing his thoughts and his life and giving him training. Passing on the faith. Our children will have a healthier appreciation for our truth if they see us building on the truths and applications of those before us rather than criticizing and critiquing all that's around us. Our children will have a greater appreciation for truth if they see us building on the truth of those before us. Passing on applications. Explain truth for today when thou walkest by the way. Family worship is crucial to the maintenance of the family unit. Wonderful time to examine God's standard, to make it practical to life, to hear your children's perspective and perception. How are they going to apply these truths at the workplace, at school, relating to each other? Help them. Use that time of family worship to make the truth practical. Helping our children come to understand the whys of what we do so that they're prepared to explain it to our grandchildren should be the intent and goal of our teaching, fathers and mothers. Not just so that they have it, but that they have it well enough that they're going to pass it on. They're going to influence the lives of their children in such a way that the truth will go on. Acceptance of things that we don't understand is certainly part of embracing truth, but understanding truth is a much surer foundation for building on than blind acceptance. Let's be careful. Parents, let's make sure the questions that come, let them come. Maybe they come with feeling. Maybe they come with a bit of resistance. Maybe they come with just a taint of, I don't want to do this. Let them come. Let the questions come. Answer the questions. Deal with the questions. Don't shut them off. Well, let's wrap it up with just a few thoughts in relation to preserving principle. In relation to your God, principle in relation to relationship with your God, relationship with your companion, relationship with your church. Have you fathers ever tried to persuade your child of a correct attitude, perspective, when your own attitude about the very same thing underneath you knew wasn't quite right? We sometimes have to do things we're called to do. And, you know, teachers, we have to maintain a front with our students that requires us to go ahead and teach. Even though we might not feel it within our own hearts, must be careful. Be careful. How many times have you watched or read about a dysfunctional father attempting to enforce things in his own household that he didn't have the self-discipline himself to maintain, to carry through with? He knows what his children need, but he fails to possess that discipline in his own life to master those very things that he's wishing his family would exemplify. A personal relationship with God is so crucial to answering the questions to this problem. A personal relationship with Jesus Christ, your God, maintaining principle in relation to your God and your relationship with Him. Fathers and mothers, if we're going to feed, we must be fed. If we're going to lead, we must be led. And so in our own hearts, we must experience. I'm sorry, we don't have time to cover the things of counterfeits here. Materialism, I wanted to touch on that. Materialism can become our God and can squeeze out our God. Relationship to your companion. I'd like to say just a little bit about this. Maintaining relationship with your wives, maintaining relationship with your husband. Many waters cannot quench love, it says in Song of Solomon. Many waters cannot quench love. But the grinding wheels of life can. The grinding wheels of life can. And it takes effort to feed and to foster love. We must have love. Build relationship. Take time to show those little endearing thoughts that you have. Express them. Write the notes. Share the words. Maintain the relationship. So much of moral failure within marriage relationships goes back to not maintaining that closeness of relationship. 43% of Americans in our country say that pornography is morally okay. 43% is what we're told. Well, statistics are just statistics. But look around you and look within your own heart. The highest demonstration of God's power is a man and a woman's ability to exercise personal discipline with regard to their own flesh. That's the highest testimony of God's power. Having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away, for of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women, laden with sins, led away with divers lusts. And we could read the surrounding verses and get a fuller and a clearer look at that passage. But moral integrity and purity of heart, singleness of eye and relationship is so crucial to the maintenance of the family unit. And it is so destructive. The opposite is so destructive. Moral failure is so destructive. Relationship to your church. Understand, fathers and mothers, your children need a church. You, as father of the home, may consider yourself the high priest of your home, but you don't take the place of the church. You do not take the place of the church. And the counterfeit here is that the enemy wishes for independence, and he wishes for us to think that the family is ours and ours alone, and so we wrap ourselves around ourselves and we become this unit, all right, without any influence and without any church influence, without any school influence, without outside input. And the family unit falls apart. We see it over and over again. Well, a lot of hanging ends there. Let me wrap it up with this. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. Are you building upon the rock? Are you a wise man and a wise mother? Building upon that rock, Jesus Christ. And that building, Jesus goes on to say that is a choice of obedience. Choice of obedience. And the foolish and disobedient who heard the sayings of Jesus walked away from him, built their house on the sand. Let's be builders on the rock today. Lord bless you.